for today is found in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is in the Old Testament, a little bit before the for the Psalms. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, and we'll be looking at chapter 2. I'd like to read for you. What did I have listed in the bulletin? The first 8 verses. We're going to be looking at the whole chapter today. I'll be reading out of the New American Standard Version this morning. And it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you're not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart." And then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?" And then the king said to me, "Well, what would you request?" So I prayed to the God of heaven. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I might rebuild it." And then the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, "How long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, let letters be given for me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they would allow me to pass through until I would come to Judah. And let a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, which is by the temple, for the wall of the city, and for the house to which I will go." And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. And I came to the governors of the provinces beyond the river, and I gave them the king's letters. And now the king has sent me with officers of the army and the horsemen. We added an extra verse in there. I just like that. May the Lord add his blessing to this, the reading of his holy word. I don't know about you, but I do enjoy the narratives. Those sections that are telling stories about God and his ways. And this book of Nehemiah introduced to me when I was rather young in Christ. I was living up in Boston at the time. I was attending Wentworth Institute of Technology as an architect, studying architectural engineering. And I was attending what was called a band of men, a small group of guys for discipleship. And they had come and they were encouraging me and discipling me. And this was one of the books that we had looked into. And it's been one of my favorites ever since. And there's a series, I think about 8 parts that I like to do on the book of Nehemiah. And we had looked a number of months ago at the first part. Now we're at the second. I don't know how often Pastor Dan's going to invite me to share, but we'll probably do part 3, which would be chapter 3, if we have that opportunity in the future. But I want to ask you a question this morning. Have you ever been burdened about something that you had no idea what to do with, how it could come about? Maybe it was a problem, maybe it was an opportunity, but something came to you and you just knew that God wanted you to do something about it. And you might say, "Who am I?" Or, "Why would you be picking on me?" Or it might be any number of other things that you might share. Oh, there have been multiple opportunities within my life that I've had that kind of experience. Since we're talking about Nehemiah and Jerusalem and the rebuilding of the wall and so forth, I thought I might just relate to you for a moment a construction kind of thing that was a challenge in ministry. our Royers Ford Church, and that is where I retired from our Royers Ford Church. I had been taken from our church planting work in Baltimore. We had been down there from 88 to 92, and in 92, January, they'd asked us to come to Royers Ford. And our church there, Trinity Royers Ford. They had purchased land a few years earlier, back in 1987, and were supposed to relocate from where they were, which was a landlocked kind of corner, and out to 5 or 6 acres in the Limerick Township. That facility hadn't moved forward. I was supposed to do something about it as the pastor, but the fact is that that property lay fallow for about 13 years until something happened. And I had no idea what God wanted to do. There were a host of design difficulties, of permitting problems, of financial, can you imagine that, issues that would be a part of building a new, I say facility rather than church. I could say church building, but we're the church, amen. And so it wasn't happening, and I was just waiting on the Lord and waiting on the Lord and waiting on the Lord. You know, this is bigger than I am, and trying to move government agencies and get the permitting, and they won't allow us to do what would be the greatest need that we'd have as a fellowship, by way of, you know, they wouldn't even allow us to have a church kitchen. Would you like to have a place in a fellowship hall and no kitchen? All right, Dream is not here to ask, but some of you other ladies, that would just be frustrating, wouldn't it? Karen, that'd be frustrating. You know, I'd like you to provide a meal for 60 or 200 people, but we don't have a place for you to warm anything up. So I'm saying, why would you even build something? Why would you invest in something that doesn't meet your need? So at any rate, Nehemiah, Just let me do a quick recoup of where we were. When we looked at him before, we found that God uses common people for uncommon purposes. He was a cupbearer to the king. The king let Nehemiah drink and eat his food, and he watched him to see if he'd die. And if he died, then the king wouldn't eat or drink it. All right, so there was a bit of a trust relationship between that. There was more responsibility. I would tend to think that Nehemiah had some input as to who bought provisions that were being cooked and who was responsible for what in the kitchen or whatever, so that he had a better likelihood that he would live. So he had some administrative responsibilities that went along with that. But he was a cupbearer. He wasn't an architect. He wasn't a builder. He knew a lot about food, and he knew his way around the kitchen. But what did he know about reconstructing a wall that had been torn down? He had a burden, though, and he inquired about the state of Jerusalem. His brothers and some others had been there in Jerusalem. They came back, and in chapter 1 we see that he had asked him, how is it? And they said, oh, it's bad. You know, the wall's still down. Everything's still burned. Nothing's being built. It's terrible. And that had been 70 years that's been going on. And nothing's been done. And Nehemiah was burdened about that. And he made this inquiry, it says back in chapter 1, in the month of Chislev. And that would be for us November, December in that area. And we talked the last time that Nehemiah was concerned. He was concerned for Jerusalem. He was broken. You know, you can be concerned about something and just go on the rest of your life. He was not only concerned, but it broke him. You know, it was a burden for him. It was always before him. And along with that brokenness, there was a prayerful attitude that continued day and night. And we would read in verse 6 of chapter 1, in his prayer, he says, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, which I'm praying before you now, day and night, on behalf of the sons of Israel and your servants. And that just continued, and he prayed, and he was burdened, and he was wondering, God, what are you going to do? Anybody relate to that? Day and night, you have a prayer, and you're praying, and the days go by, and the weeks go by, and the months go by, and we get to chapter 2. And it says in chapter 2 that we're still in the 20th year of Artaxerxes, but now we are in the month of Nisan. All right, now that's not the car manufacturer. That's the name of the Hebrew month that would correspond to what would be our March, April. So 4 or 5 months have gone by, almost a half a year that this has been ruminating in Nehemiah's heart. And it begins to unfold. And as we do, and, you know, for whatever, things didn't work over here. And I had said coming in, you know, we managed to preach for thousands of years without either an overhead or a PowerPoint projector. And so I'm not going to get all riled up by that. But you do have an outline, and we're finally to the outline. And I'd like to give you, for those of you that are OCD and can't take an outline home that hadn't filled in your blanks, that would ruin your day. So we don't want that to happen. So the truth that we would have last time was God uses common people for uncommon purposes. Today it's God gives provision to accomplish the uncommon purposes. God gives provision. God not only makes a way, but he gives us what we need to do what God desires for us to do. And as we think about that, Nehemiah shows some traits of, I believe, leadership. And you don't have to be an elected official or anything like that to be a leader. There just have to be people that would be, looking to you, or you would be responsible for, whatever that might be. Moms and dads are leaders within the home, at least they should be. Whether you have the title of supervisor or not at work, you can be a leader in the amongst of the people that you would work with. Show them the way, a better way in all of this. Nehemiah, he was the leader of the cupbearers. There's probably another one in the wing just in case he went down. So at any rate, we see some characteristics that played into the personality of Nehemiah that allowed him to be used significantly of God. And we need people in our families, in our church fellowships, within our country, our nation, that would have these qualities and be willing to live them out. And the first one that I see here is that Nehemiah was careful. He was careful, verses 1 to 3. Did you notice it said, and I thought this was out of place when I read, you know, he's reading along, he's saying about, you know, it's the king and this is the year and so forth. And he says, I hadn't been sad in his presence. Now, didn't that sound, you know, funny? How many times did you have to say, well, I wasn't sad in their presence? Well, you know, the king was like God, and evidently if you were sad in God's presence or the king's presence, they could just go ahead and off you, all right? So that the idea was that you didn't want to be sad because they'd think that you were, God was, the king was, making you sad, and that didn't make them happy. So how they dealt with that, get rid of the person, all right, that didn't make them happy, that was sad. It was easy. So you wanted to be happy outwardly, even if you weren't. So you'd want to be careful about what you'd say and what you'd do. I think that more people could be more careful today in the many ways that we communicate, particularly, I'd say, on social media today, you know, and the things, you know, just. At any rate, we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, but he was careful. He hadn't been sad, but even though he tried not to be sad, what did the king pick up on? The king picked up on the fact that he was sad. And we would see in verse 2, he says, well, why are you sad? You're not sick. You know, I could see it if you were sick. Hard to be happy when you're sick. But I don't see that. You know what I think? I think this is sadness. of the heart. There's something visceral that's got you all worked up that you are finding it difficult to be happy in my presence, Nehemiah. Now, Nehemiah, you are the best cupbearer that I've ever had. Now I'm going off script a little bit. And I want you to be around. I don't want to have to get rid of you. So what's bothering you so that we can make this right so that I don't have to take your life? Then I was very much afraid when he, you know. And he had reason to be because that's the way kings were. Not only was he careful, and this is a little aside in the same one, we're not going down to verses 4 through 10 yet. I sort of added in my notes that he was careful, but he was also truthful. You know, we come in here on a day, and you've heard it said, "How are you?" "Oh, I'm fine." And somebody looks at you, and you know that, you know, something's off. So they might come back and say, "Are you sure?" Now, Nehemiah would have said, "Well, you got me." No, not. We would say, "Oh, yeah," because we don't want to go into it. Not because we're afraid we'd lose our life, but for whatever reason. Nehemiah was careful, but when challenged, he was truthful. And he said, "Why shouldn't I be sad? You know, where my fathers were is just devastated. Everything's been consumed by fire. The rubble's been laying around for decades, and it doesn't seem like anything can get done." He was careful. He was truthful when challenged. And then, this is your next one, bold. He was bold, 4 through 10. King said, "Well, what's your request?" All right. Put another way, "How can I help you?" "How can I help you?" And then what does it say? "I prayed to the God of heaven." How long do you think that prayer was? That probably wasn't very long at all. Yeah, help me. What do I say? How bold can I be? Something like that. But he had been praying and fasting for how long? At least 4 months, almost 24/7. And now it was time. Shot a quick one to the Lord. And then he said, "Would you let me go?" Now, if you were a king and your life was entrusted into this man, the cupbearer, Nehemiah, and you knew there might have been another one in the wing, but you know you didn't have the same kind of trust level with him, would you be ready to give this guy up to know that maybe somebody else would be able to get to you and poison you? Consider that. But it's interesting. He says the queen's sitting there too. So he probably looked at the queen and the queen looked at him, and they decided, "We'll let him go. We'll let him go." And then they said, "How long are you going to be?" How long do you think he said? It doesn't say. It doesn't say, but if we go all the way back to chapter 13 and verse 6, we find out when he went back. And it says, "But during all this time I was not in Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, I went back to the king." This is the 20th, and then this was in the 32nd, so there were 12 years. "I think I'm going to be away 12 years. Do you think that's bold? Imagine going into your boss at work and saying, "You know, I'd like a leave of absence." Why? Because, well, things are a wreck back at the family house and they need to be sorted. All right, I can understand that. How much time do you need? How much boldness would you have? 2 weeks? 2 months? 2 years? Nehemiah, man, he went for 12. I don't know why he said 12, but evidently it was 12. And being a responsible man, he made sure he got back when he was supposed to. But it was an extended period of time. That's bold. That's bold. What else? Did he stop there? He didn't. When we get it down there, we see in verse 7, I said to the king, if it please king, give me letters for the governors of the provinces so they'll let me pass. You know, I not only want the time, but I want to get to where I need to be. We call that today a passport. If you want to go to a foreign land, you need a passport to safely travel and pass through. So he not only asked for time off, 12 years, he asked for a passport so he'd be able to get to where he needed to be. And you'd think that'd be enough, but no. He was bold enough to ask for provision. He said, hey, I'll tell you what, since we're on a roll, why don't you give me a letter, you know, just open-ended, that any timber that I'm going to need to do the work that I need to do, that it'll be provided for me free of charge. Is that bold? Man, I tell you, I'd love to go over to Carter's Lumber and say, give me anything, all right, that I would need for the next 12 years to work on my house. I think the first time I went there to get a couple of 2x4s, now this was a number of years ago during the pandemic kind of thing, I think they were like $9. $9 for a 2x4. That was disgusting. So at any rate, he asked for timber and he got it. And did his boldness stop there? No, not at all. Verse 9. And he says, now, the king sent me with officers of the army and horsemen. What did he ask for? Protection. So he got his time off 12 years. And in his boldness before the Lord, he said, oh, let me see. I need a way to get there. Passport. I need building materials to do the work. All right, check. And you know, it'd be nice to be sure I'd safely arrive. And he got that as well. We don't finish that section without seeing in verse 10 that he also had a problem. It was a couple of guys that were on the scene outside of Jerusalem, Sanballat and Tobiah. And they weren't happy that he was coming. It says they were displeasing to them that some would come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. Understand and know any time that God would be moving to do what needs to be done, particularly on the behalf of his bride Israel, extending into the church today, that others will be upset. As it was, so it is, and it ever shall be until the Lord returns. Nehemiah was careful and Nehemiah was bold. We see too that Nehemiah was patient. That's not a virtue that always works well with me. I tell people out of practical experience, don't pray for patience. That's not some, it's a fruit of the Spirit. I'm thankful for that, but don't pray for it. And somebody might ask, well, why? Because patience can only be cultivated on the wings of adversity. If there's no reason to be patient, you can't learn it. So as long as things are going well, do you ask for patience? No, not at all. We don't need it. It's when things are beginning to have some difficulty. Well, Nehemiah was patient. And in that patience, he didn't run ahead of what God wanted to do. He waited until he understood by way of God working in his own heart. He finally arrived at Jerusalem, verse 11, and he got right to work. Finally, he was there. Does it say that? What does it say in verse 11? It says, I came to Jerusalem and I was there for what? For 3 days. Now, it was a long journey, I'll give that, you know, so that he probably wanted to rest up just a little bit. I think he also wanted to get to know some of the leadership that would be there, some of those that are the decision makers, maybe the priests, and so forth, and say hello to them and hear their story and sort of get a lay of the land. I think that's important in leadership, not just to come in and start firing your six-shooters, you know, but to you know, what's going well, what's not going well, what do you see his needs and so forth. And I can just hear in those 3 days that, you know, he's talking with them and he's getting an understanding of what's going on, patiently listening, understanding and knowing that God wants to do something, but how and when. Not only that, and this is your next one, verses 12 and 16, Nehemiah, I think, was a little bit secretive. Secretive. Now, I think that that could be a dirty word in our society today. Full disclosure is what everybody wants at this particular point, but often I think things go awry because they're pried out into the open before they've had an opportunity to mature. And as it would be better for a baby to come to full term and be born rather than premature, so I think some of the ideas that God would be cultivating, it would be good as well. Nehemiah understood that. So he held his, to put a colloquialism, his cards close to his chest. Now, we don't play cards, do we? You don't need to answer that. Growing up at the Palmyra Church, nobody played cards in Palmyra. That was Sin City. when we got to Royer's World, we found out everybody played cards. Well, over in Palmyra, where Connie and where that's my home church as an EC pastor, you know, you didn't dance either. Man, we got to Royer's Fort. Man, they danced. It was culture shock. It really was. But at any rate, being secretive, we find that at night, not during the day, at night, verse 12, he got up. He took a few good guys with him. He didn't really tell anybody where they were going and what they were doing, those that were with him. And he went out to survey the devastation. He saw some of it as he came in from Babylon. It was a month or two of that journey of some 800 miles till he got there. He's talked with everybody, and now he's going out to eye it up himself. He says in verse 16, the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. They might not have even known that he got up in the middle of the night. I don't know. But at any rate, he hadn't told the Jews, he hadn't told the priests, he hadn't told the nobles, he hadn't told the officials or the rest who did the work. All right, this is in hindsight, who will do the work, what the plan would be. He was secretive about the plan, but he wanted to get it right. On the back of your bulletin insert that you're filling out is a sort of a map of Jerusalem. On a half sheet, it gets pretty small. I'm sorry about that, and we don't have anything to show a larger amount. But there, you know, sort of in the middle, you'll see the word city. City, underneath that, of, underneath that, David. Can you see that? City of David. Just to the left of the word city is the Valley Gate, and that's where he went out. He went out that gate, and he proceeded south down along the word central till he got down to the bottom where it says stairs, the city of David. And then he turned the corner and he got up just a little bit where it says the king's pool. And things were so bad that they weren't even able to get past there. So when you look at that, in terms of all of that darker wall around there, it looks like he only got to look at about a quarter of the devastation till he had to turn around and go back. He saw about a quarter of the problem, but he knew that things were even worse than he had suspected. He couldn't even move on around the wall. It was so bad. We see, too, that as that plan germinated, that he would be informed. That's the walking around and getting to see the devastation itself as he inspected the wall, verse 15, that he was informed. And the next blank with verse 17 is that he was realistic. I appreciate people that are realistic. Do you? If somebody would ask of my own personality, I would say that I would be an optimistic realist. I hope for the best, but I see what's there. I'm not a Pollyanna. You know what a Pollyanna is? You just close your eyes and you say, everything's going to be okay. God doesn't want Pollyannas, but I think he wants us to be realistic. And we'll see that Nehemiah also had some optimism. He says to everybody, you see the bad situation that we're in. What did he call it? It's a bad situation. It's desolate. The gates are burned by fire. And then he begins to reveal the plan. Why is there? Come, let's rebuild the wall of Jerusalem so that we'll no longer be a reproach. That's a proposal that he gives. And that was a realistic proposal that had some optimism. And that's your next with verse 18. He was optimistic. Because along with the realism that the walls are down, that the rubble's so great that we can't get through, nobody can do anything, has done anything, the job with you guys is so big that you've despaired. I don't see that it's any better, but we're going to do something. And I'll tell you, it's going to get done, and this is why. And I told them, and never forget this, never, ever forget this. I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me. Have you seen the hand of God? Do you remember the hand of God? The things that you've experienced in the past, that which you've seen, little rays of light shining through, leading, providing, coming to this particular point where God would provide and he would use you to do an uncommon thing, a great thing to the glory of God, a needful thing. And so he calls us out. And he talked about how when he spoke with the king not only gave him the leave of absence, but he also gave him a passport and he gave him provision and he gave him protection. And they would have said, wow, and all this is positive. It's positive. There's an optimism in the midst of the darkness because of who God is. And this has been a stirring of God's heart that in this time, in this way, right now, he wants to use you, you all, yous, to do that. And along with that, and this is the final blank, that he was exclusive. Another countercultural word. The word today is what? Inclusive. He was exclusive. He said, the God of heaven will give us success. Anybody that stands with the God of heaven stands with me. Anybody that does not stand with the God of heaven does not stand with me. Sanballat and Tobiah, you don't stand with the God of heaven. If we allow you to mix in with this great work that God desires to do, you will be there to try to make it fail. Be careful who you saddle up with in the great things that God desires for you to do. For if you do saddle up with the wrong people, with the wrong attitudes, they'll suck the very life out of you. And what God would desire to do will not come to its fullness, its fruition. So be careful. Be careful. So that's Nehemiah and some points by way of leadership and some characteristics that I hope some of you have, maybe all of them, and bring them to bear as God would be stirring your heart. And where is God stirring your heart? That's our response. What is your need? What's the need that God's stirring your heart about? You don't have to be a trustee or a steward or a teacher or an official of the church in some way to have your heart stirred. Where's God stirring your heart? It might be within the ministry of the walls of this facility. It might be within the needs of the community. It might be within the needs of this nation or even this world. For they are all great. But what is the need that's bigger than you, that needs a God that wants to move your heart and provide and protect and care and bring that about? What's your need and how will you plan? How will you plan? Nehemiah was a man that had a plan. And we'll see more of that plan if we have a chance to get to part 3. And I hope we do. But how will you plan? And where is your allegiance? Where is your allegiance? Do not shirk from being a child of God. Don't be obnoxious, but don't cover over your light. The light is needed today. So, Lord, I'd ask that you bless my brothers and sisters as we've considered the life of Nehemiah and the need that you stirred his heart to meet. And we haven't seen how that would. We've just seen how big it is, but how you've laid the groundwork to make it happen. And my brothers and sisters here, in great and small ways, in the family or the family of God or within the needs of this nation or world, which are great, and it's in great turmoil, and time is short. Stir our hearts, Jesus. Stir them strongly in different areas, not all the same, to accomplish your purpose. And show us how in all that they would work together. And please be glorified. Protect us from those that would be enemies, those that would hinder the work of the kingdom. Silence them. Give us wisdom to see as to what's going on. Thwart their plans. May they find themselves fallen into their own pits. And Lord, that you would make our ways straight. So, O Jesus, in these last days, be glorified. And accomplish your purpose in Jesus' name. Amen.